Hey, what's going on? This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and I just wanted to jump in here really quick. This is going to be episode 222, and this is an Imagine Listening episode. This is a live audience episode, or session rather, from the Gulf Coast Conference in Alabama from a couple weeks ago. I've been playing catch up for a little while now. I've got three episodes that I have lined up. And there's some pretty good ones. I've got this one, Imagine Listening, and then Open Mic. And then episode 224 is with Nathan and Ryan of the Denise Amberley Foundation. And that is an excellent episode as well. But I wanted to jump in here really quick just to let you know that the audio is not a direct feed into my digital audio recorder, like I've done in the past. The hookups weren't there for it, so I was not able to do it. So I had a little microphone on my phone. So it's going to sound a little different. You can hear everything. It'll just sound like, we were in a big room, so you'll be able to tell. other than that, there was an article recently that I posted on withinthetrenches.net, and it's called "But We Are Secretaries." This article exploded. It is a raw look into dispatch and during a natural disaster. And it did very, very well. At the time that it was up, I had to take it down. There was a little controversy that came with it. But at the time that it was up, it had surpassed 25,000 people reached. It had been shared so many times. It was also shared with a congresswoman out of California, a chairwoman with the FCC. And it was commented by a woman who has a husband who is a government official in Ohio. And she was going to forward it to him. So as all this is building up and everything is going really well for this article and the person who wrote it, I end up hearing from this person that we need to take it down for now because there's a little bit of controversy. They just want to make sure that there's no violations or anything in there, which there wasn't. It did get checked out. So it's going to go back up. But from the time that I had taken it down just a couple days ago, today is November 1st. So just a couple days ago, I had taken it down. Several people either tweeted or sent messages asking why it was taken down and were almost demanding for it to get put back up. Now, this wasn't my choice, and this wasn't the choice of the author either, but to protect everyone involved, we needed to take it down just for now, but it will be going back up. You'll hear more about it as this episode goes on, but again, I just wanted to jump in really quick to let you know what was going on. Why, episodes haven't gone up regularly like they have. Again, these episodes that I'm putting up right now came in a few weeks ago at the conference, and I've just been playing catch up with my 9-to-5. There's a lot of stuff going on, excuse me, and I'm not about to bite the hand that feeds me. As many of you can probably understand, I don't do this full time. I would love to do this podcast full time, but this is what I do on the side. And my 9-to-5 is very important, and I love what I do with my 9-to-5. And they're also a big supporter of the podcast. So with that, on with the show.
This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning, this episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned. Imagine a world where you have grown old with the love of your life. You had an amazing day, a day you wish would never end. You kiss your spouse goodnight and look forward It's what the next day brings. Now imagine your 911. Taking a call from a spouse who has just found their wife of 60 years cold and not breathing. In those moments, your caller teaches you what love really is. This is what it's like within the trenches. In this episode, you will hear stories from the I Am 911 movement, a movement I started to fight the reclassification of dispatchers from clerical to protective and bring awareness to the types of calls that 911 dispatchers answer on a daily basis. This is a live audience episode, and we recorded live from Orange Beach, Alabama for the 2018 Gulf Coast Conference. Now, you heard the warning at the beginning, but I must warn you again and add that if you suffer from PTSD or have suicidal tendencies, you are listening at your own risk. The stories you're about to hear are all true and come from the dispatchers who live them. While some stories have a good outcome, the majority are horrifying. This is our reality. Your worst day is our every day. So let's start with a bang. I want you to imagine each story. Become the dispatcher who has taken each call and imagine listening.
It's something horrifying or anything. It's just something that touches your heart when you make a call and somebody's hysterical. They're driving and you're trying to get them to calm down. What's going on? And trying to keep them as calm as possible. They're like, I can't talk to my mom. I tried to call her. She won't answer the call. And you're sitting there and you're like, okay, well, where did your mom live? Who was the last time you talked to her? Well, my husband's there. He just got there. He just texted me and told me he's there. And she's probably a good 15, 20 minutes away at this point. And she goes, my husband just told me that she's on the floor. She doesn't have her clothes on. She's not moving. He can't get inside. And the worst part about that is that I will never know what happened. You lose your mom, and that automatically impacts your life forever. And since I lost my mother, it makes a difference. Because you're like, is she okay? Is she ever going to see my mom? Can she hug her and tell her she loves her? There's nothing like it. We don't have that closure. We'll never get that closure because we're on the backside of it. That's right. The worst part of it. This particular call or a series of calls happened at an agency I worked for previously. We handled what was called call distribution, and so the call automatically ring in your ear. We had the option of being on ready or not ready. But this particular night, we had 7 call takers, and it seemed like everybody was on not ready, and all the calls were coming to me. So it seems like I've known that kind of night where every call you get seems to be crazy. Well, this one I had a series of 3 calls. They didn't come back to back. They were maybe an hour apiece, but I realized that they were all connected to each other. I received the first call of a woman. She wanted to report her husband missing. She was not from the state. She was out of state, so she was like, he was supposed to go there and meet someone to buy something, and he said that he would come back, and he has not been back. I've been trying to call him. He's not answering. Is there a way you all can find him? So I get the information from her, you know, what's his name, what did he last see him, you know, what was he wearing before he left, and what was he drive. And she gave me this information, and I told her that, you know, I get this information from officers, you know, shortly after that, I received another call, and I didn't know it was him, but it was him that called. And it was a man who said, I've been shot. And at this particular time, I'm like, okay, where are you? Call on 911, please. Of course, that's not a favorite 911.
Yeah.
But this particular agency didn't have that great of resources, so I have Google Maps and retransmit button and longitudinal latitude. So I'm trying to find where he's at. You know, where is he? Where are you? He's past labor breeding, so he's like barely talking to me, but he's telling me what he does know. And he said, I don't know. I'm in the alley, and you know, like, sorry, I don't know. He just was talking very slowly, so it wasn't full sentences. It was just, you know, every word in there. And after a while, he goes silent on the phone. And so I'm still talking, sir, you know, sir, are you here? Sir, I don't get anything. He's not saying anything. So I'm still trying to put in the longitude and latitude. I get it in and get to the dispatcher. And I'm like, this is where it's putting, you know, putting him, but I don't know if that's exactly where he is. So they get out there, and I just don't see anything. So they end up closing the call. They didn't see anything. They stayed out there for a very long time looking. It was dark, it was probably around about 4 a.m. or something. So a little while later, we received another call. Of course, I answered it. And it was another young lady. She so happened to be walking down the alley. She said, hey, I'm on such and such street. It was out behind this particular building. There's a man here. I don't know if he's asleep or passed out or, you know, what. Get someone here. So I get the information, send it to the dispatcher, and they eventually find him. And of course, he passed. I didn't play it out. But I don't know. I guess, you know, when you don't have the resources that you need, a lot of us don't with dispatching. So it's like everybody feels like we're supposed to know exactly where they are immediately. But it's hard to find them when you're very limited. And when you call them cell phones, when you have the 911 prefix, it's hard to find out exactly where they are. So I felt a little nervous because I couldn't get, you know, that much information to know where he didn't know where he was. The wife didn't know where our town was in.
Right.
And so, you know, you kind of feel bad, you know, originally we could get out there sooner when you have survived. So, yeah.
What if I would have asked questions a different way? What if I would have done it this way? We start to blame ourselves for that. And you should, but we're the ones who took that call. That's why it makes it so hard.
I was with one. There was a lady on the other end. She's had a name of breathing. Got the address. Got whispered about. She vows that she had eaten some seafood. Did not know she was allergic, but was having a severe allergic allergy to it. I stayed on the phone with her. They would lay out in the community to rescue. It seemed like forever, but it was almost 20 minutes by the time they got to her. The whole time they're in route, I have her on 911. She's begging me, or she thinks that she's home alone. She's begging me, please tell my family that I love them. Please tell my son not to be mean to my dog. I mean, that was one of her last thoughts. And I'm on 911 thinking I'm hearing this lady's last breath. She would literally stop breathing, and then you could hear her gasp, and she'd breathe, you know, again for a little bit. And it went on for like almost 20 minutes before rescue finally got there. They actually arrived and was able to reverse her. She wound up making it, but I mean, it's just that you're sitting there and they're begging you, you know. They literally know it's not unless somebody gets there. And they're begging you, please, you know, come out there when I love them. Knowing that you're probably the last one that they're ever going to talk to. If they, you know, if they don't come out, or they're going to fight the shot, they're going to. And I mean, that one has actually been years ago that I took it, but it's often closed. It's like 6 weeks. Because it's just something that you can't ever forget. And then on top of that, here at her gasping for breath and thinking about stress. Or you know, he's letting the best focus. It doesn't ever seem to get easier or to go away. Answered 911. There was a man subject on the phone. He told me that him and his mother were having problems. And that he was just tired of living and tired of putting up with all of her stuff, and that he was fixing to blow his brains out. I tried talking to him. I begged. I pleaded. And he said they just was tired, he didn't have anything else to live for. And I told him, you know, I kept trying to tell him, yeah, you do, you know. And I stayed on the phone with him for 20 minutes. Just before my officers got on, my neighbors got on scene. He told me, he said, I want you to know that I love you for being the last person to speak to me. And then he closes. I hear the shots on 911. And that's a call that I relive every day. Every day. Because I was trying to do everything I could to help him. But he meant he was going to do it. And he wanted somebody to hear him when he did it. And I had to be that one. So, you know, it's hard. You try to go on, you try to, you know, get past it. But then you'll take another call of somebody who wants to commit suicide. And it just brings back all that. So it's a never-ending cycle. You know, I know the end result of that, but there's a lot of them that we don't know. And the not knowing is really what hurts the most.
All of you, how many of you have some sort of SISM team in place for calls like that? SISM being
critical incident stress management. Only one. Holy shit.
So all of this that we're doing right now, these stories that we're sharing, the I Am 911 movement, all of that has really opened eyes. And people have really gotten behind their dispatchers and wanting to provide some sort of help, something, because they realize that their dispatchers are under a lot of stress. Finally, people are waking up. You know, they're caring, finally. And by sharing all of these stories, people listening, reading, sharing and sharing, it's going to get better. Past couple of years is where it really started going, and we continue to do this, and it's been really good. Like I said, for you two, if you didn't hear it, I'm a former dispatcher, 13 years, and I was one of those dispatchers who buried my calls, and it took a long time, and also putting my family through some shit, me not getting it out, that you know, like I said, I learned the hard way. But I found it therapeutic to share stories, either writing, ultimately doing what I'm doing now. Because I have calls as well that I still struggle with, that I think about. But I'm able to manage it now because I'm sharing, because I'm
because more people are hearing about it. And once you share a story, believe it or not, you get some form of closure out of that. And to be in a room with people who understand you, that know where you come from, there's something special in that. You might not think about it, but it happens.
I'm from the town I grew up in, so eventually you're going to get a call from somebody here. I was working nights. Our officer gave into a chase. The man runs into his house. I get a 911 call. It's his mother screaming. She just watched her son blow his head off as he was running off. I went to school with him. They had one of my best friends in high school. And now I still work at the same agency and have another male that we deal with quite often that has the same first and last name. So every time somebody runs his name, I think of the other guy that I was school with that I knew. I've had many other calls from people that I know. I listen to them cry because they're off the side. I've had family members call. When you work in a small town, it's inevitable. You're going to know someone. And it's hard. It's really hard.
Thank you.
Small town where everybody knows everybody. And to give you a little history on this call that I'm about to tell you about, I come in second hand to the first call that we had done with this family. And because a girl of my age, she just had a baby, and her 3 month old was not breathing for a little bit from her. Her child didn't make it. My partner took that call. And a couple months ago, I had a call from him. Her husband called in where he was hysterical and she forgot to cover her car and more. The baby's mother of the other one. She forgot to put her car and more and it rolled over on top of her. And it couldn't get it off of her. And they had just had another baby. And I had two. Same age as me. Our kids nearly the same age. And I put myself in that situation of how my husband would deal with that. And to hear her husband crying for real, telling her that he loved her and that he couldn't let her die like this. Me encouraging him and trying to get that car jacked up off of her was the hardest thing that I could have ever done. That's my story.
I want to say really quick, if you haven't seen the movie yet, watch. It's not because I'm trying to hurt anyone up. I just want to keep you all on time. So, not being there. Just looking at my watch to make sure. Then, here, break it up a little bit there as well as the first part.
My agency had taken this is the person before. It's a teenager. His last name is local high school. The next day, I received a 911 call from his sister who did not live in the same residence as him. She had located his vehicle South Park by Allen Country Pack Group. And I sailed off with her while she got out and checked the vehicle. It was a little relief because he wasn't in the vehicle. We were like, maybe he broke down, called a friend, and he's at the friend's house. Before she had called 911, she had called a couple of her friends, and they were on their way to her location. I had also dispatched my close supervisor to the location. Her friends got on the scene. They started walking around. They noticed an abandoned residence. Friends went in, and then the only thing I heard was screams. Her cell phone was broken. Patrol supervisor being on the scene, the friends had located the missing juvenile inside the residence and the suicide weapon. We do not know why the sister didn't know why, but it was the scream that she's doing and did not get happened.
Sunday, March 20th, 2016, we come from a small community, therefore our agency only worked one dispatch at a time. I was scheduled to work 0700 hours to 1500 hours that day. On this particular day, I looked at the clock and said 1400 hours in my VA, 1 more hour ago. Well, my first 911 call came in due to a small community in the area having a what they call a community reunion. Got a call saying that shots were fired in the area. I'm like, can't be fireworks. No. Typical. 2-3 more calls came in. In the process, the officers did get around. Come find out we had 2 murders in one day from this shots being fired in the area. Officers were being hit. Other agencies actually had to pull in. The third person that was shot that particular day ended up dying probably a month later. I was by myself working. Not only did I not get off at 1,500 hours, I'm dedicated to when I start the job, I like to finish it, so I stayed another full shift to complete what I actually had started. Regardless if I started vacation that next day or whatever, I stayed until the end. Because I feel like coming from a small community, and I'm sure all of us in here come from many small communities in Alabama, it's hard because you know several of the individuals involved, if not all. So that really touched me, and it kind of stayed with me throughout the years. When that day comes around, it reminds me that, hey, this happened such day. That's why I can call off the top of my head like it was yesterday. And it has just dawned on me this past March that it's like the anniversary of the murders in a small town that we would have never thought anything of that nature would have happened, and it did.
My agency, we dispatched EMS to fire departments. This was probably back in 2011, 2012. I took a call where it was a teenage girl screaming at her friend and just shot herself in the head. So it took me a few minutes to get her calm down, and I was able to get more of the story. She told me that they were playing with her dad's gun and went off. And so I got her calm down, was able to do CPR. Our ambulance was coming from good ways in place, so we got our city fire department respond and had a closer ambulance. So they got there, packaged her up, took her to the hospital, and kept replaying the call in my head just to make sure I did everything, you know, good EMD wise, and also it was going to be investigated by the police, and they were going to be listening to it and making sure, you know, everything was done right. And turns out, I found out probably about a month later from my boss that police did more investigation. she gave the false story of what actually happened. And the girl that called 911 had actually shot a friend because they were having some type of disagreement over a boyfriend or something like that. So at that point was that, you know, the girl ended up passing away, but also a good part was that they were able to get her and her family some justice. And I ended up actually getting dispatcher of the year or independent call. So
good job. Thank you. Who else has a start?
This role is a very dangerous role. And it's actually, she isn't my cousin, but I grew up with her like she's my cousin. It's not like family within family. I had officer going one way, she was driving another way, and very tireless, and he flipped around on her, and I think she saw him, so she sped up, and she was going to pass the car around. She was trying to get away from my officer. But when she went to pass the car, she saw another car, so she had to get back home, and she ditched. But what we didn't know was she had her son in the backseat. When she ditched, her son went out the window. And when Rob got behind her, he hit up on the radio and he called my name. And they never did that. And he called my name and he said, I need an ambulance. It's a baby. And only thing I could ask him, I said, well, how old? He said, I don't know. Four or five. Well, this is the way I was thinking. The way God works is the lady she almost hit at home was a surgeon at the hospital that's right up the street from where she was. And the surgeon said, that baby is not 4 or 5. That baby is maybe 1 or 2. You need to tell the truth. Because she came, the way my officer described it was, there was a cloud of smoke, and she came out of the cloud of smoke with this baby in her arms. And he said, all he could see was the baby limp over. And the doctor said, that baby is maybe 1 or 2. So then he came back up and said, the baby's 1 or 2. Well, they get an ambulance, and the doctor was saying, you're going to have to air flight the baby. The baby was so bad that it had almost ripped his leg off. It did rip his ear off. And we didn't think the baby was going to survive. And the officer, he has 5 kids. He's adopted 2 kids. He has 1 kid. So he was completely shook up. And when I ran the tag and I noticed the girl's name, I used to babysit this girl. I know her kids. I know she has just lost a child a year before from CDs. So then I got shook up because I knew I eventually someone was going to call me and ask me about all that I could not tell them about. I'm wondering, is this baby going to survive? I'm calling my officer, and my officer was like, he should not look good. He's like, I don't think this baby's going to survive. The flight is hot from here to the hospital. So when I got home and I asked one of my cousins, they said, well, the baby was rushing the surgery, he's still okay. And I kept on, you know, I kept watching. The officers kept asking me, is the baby okay? And I said, well, he's in critical, but he's okay. A couple weeks later, I got a call. The baby was coming home, and he's walking. So I was able to go and take a picture and give it to the officer. And the look on my officer's face when I give him that picture of this baby, he has that little crying thing. I don't know what that thing is. Around the head, they were able to reattach his ear. He's walking, he's talking, he's a walking, talking mirror, blessing God. The look on my officer's face when he broke down in tears, just because we didn't think this baby was going to survive tonight. And this was 3 months ago, and this baby is running around like nothing ever happened. Now, I bless this girl out, but she didn't have this child in car seat or anything. You walk away from the accident, your child won't die. I went above dispatcher on her after I figured out, you know, you're part of the family. But the after effect of being able to know this child survived and I was able to see this child walk and talk and grab this little boy and hug this little boy. That feeling is amazing. That feeling is awesome because I didn't know that baby was going to survive. I had officers out there crying and praying and begging. And then they started, Keisha, whatever this child needs, call us. You know, if he needs a car seat, because she didn't have a car, she didn't have any car seat or anything. And then she was lying because she thought she was going to be in trouble. Well, yeah, you're going to be in trouble. But right now, we're just trying to give this baby some help. They started collecting money, you know, whatever this baby needs, you know, we're going to give it for the baby. But it was just the looks my officers were giving me when I brought a picture saying, hey, same baby I bought one, one more baby that night. He's running around, he's playing. They were so happy, and I was so happy. So the feeling is amazing when you can actually see it happen. Because we don't get that. Usually when we hang up the phone, it's done, it's done, you know.
Exactly.
So.
My story is more so why I chose to be 911 now. I'm 36, I'm a big advocate at the Sheriff's Office in Florida. And I chose this job because I find comfort in not knowing. Because it was like we were fighting the same fight that they would consider us adventuring staff. But we got dispatched to scenes to meet the families at hospitals or the company officers to do family patients and what have you. And every time dispatch called, our mom came to my heart. And then I was going to be the navigating community where I went to school. And I'll never forget we had a special hospital. They were like, we have a shooting victim. Was not looking good. We had to get the family into the hospital. And I walked in and recognized everybody in there. And it was my hospital. And most of the time when we get called out, it's because of something really sexual assault, especially with the children or domestic violence victim. So I find comfort in not knowing what happens. It's, I just have to be there during and while within the justice process. And sometimes they may not even find justice. So that was it. So I said, I'm on 1 hour because I don't. I was working Sunday night and it was supposed to be shift change. And it had been a pretty slow day. I had to be getting called this week and we worked 12-hour shifts and went as back to first shift. I'm thinking, you know, this is nothing. This is one day all day and I'm getting the call and I have a lady screaming in my ear. I shot, and my first reaction is, shot who? Who did you shoot, ma'am? And she says, I shot my husband. And I said, okay, ask me what is your address. She gives me her address. I pull it up in the cab, and it is our local police chief's residence. And all I think is, oh my goodness, I was just smiling. So I get her name and I said, ma'am, I said, who did you shoot? And she gives me his name and I said, is he awake? And she says, barely. I said, is he bleeding? She's like, yes. I said, is he bleeding from anywhere? And she says, yes, I can get to stop. I said, okay. So I'm gonna go ahead and do some help. I need to let you know home. I had to call the police department. I don't know how I told her that her chief had been shot. I have no idea how to remember to this day. But to have to tell another agency what they are going to have to deal with is probably one of the hardest things that I've ever had to do. So, and I have to tell her she is going to help people so that when they get there, they don't end up shooting her. As a reaction. And all of them, she is going to help him, she is going to help him. Just let them know that. So I go back to her, we need control again, and I mean, as soon as they get there, the problem is dead. So we not know them.
portion. I try to end Imagine Listening with, you know, a good outcome. And we've heard some good outcomes, but, you know, this is one of mine. It was early on in my dispatch career when I was working in Allegan County, the last PSAP that I worked for, and I had just gotten off training, and it was wintertime, and I take a call from a hysterical mother where her children had been sliding down the hill. They have a pond, and they were trying to see who could get the furthest, and the youngest got the furthest. However, the youngest ended up going all the way to the middle of the pond, and she was saying it was thin ice. She didn't want to go out there to get her. So her daughter is stuck in the middle of the pond. She's freaking out. I get everybody set out there, and I'm freaking out myself. You know, I've got kids too, and I'm, you know, as dispatchers, we're empaths. You know, we put ourselves in their shoes. We're calm and cool on the call. We're focused. But like I said, in the back of our minds, we're freaking out. And I keep her calm, at least calm enough. Help gets out there, and I sit there and just waiting. Waiting, and finally they say that they got her. They got her out. Such a moment of relief. But then a few days later, it might have been a week later actually, my supervisor, she yells out, "Who took this call?" And I knew she was reading the newspaper. I thought, oh shit. Because I had been on phones for a while. And I said, it might have been me. What is in the newspaper? And the family had put out a message to dispatch and all of public safety that helped their daughter. Very cool moment. I have that newspaper clipping still. A round of applause for everyone who shared a story, please.
Those are just a few stories from Imagine Listening, an extension of the podcast featuring the stories of the I Am 911 movement. These stories came from the amazing 911 professionals from the state of Alabama. Thank you so much for attending my session and for sharing a glimpse into your 911 experience. So, in the beginning, I spoke of a controversial article that was posted to withinthetrenches.net. It's a raw look at dispatch life during a natural disaster. And although it has been taken down, it will be put back up soon. For now, though, I'm going to read it to you in its entirety. This is an anonymous article, and it's a powerful one. It's called, "But We Are Secretaries." It's been a while since Hurricane Michael hit. I am still processing what has happened to my town. Even now, driving around feels like a place I have never been to and don't know. People don't understand what we do, and probably do not care. They classify us as secretaries or below, not allowing us to be classified as high risk like police, fire, and EMS personnel. The average person couldn't do our job. This is not for the faint of heart. I have personally had some of the worst calls of my near 20-year career during this event. I have also been witness to many and heard stories from fellow coworkers of theirs. This is just a taste. I will leave out certain details. I found a neighbor face down in the pool. I have started CPR. What do I do? I am sorry. Do CPR as long as you can. We are not responding to calls at this time. I found my husband dead. A tree fell on him, and I cannot make it without him. Gunshot sound, and line goes dead. My mother is having a stroke. Please send us help. I don't want her to die. I am sorry. We cannot get to you. Please, hold her close and tell her you love her. Help me. I can't hold onto my kids anymore. I got to let one go. Crash. And line goes dead. Help. My house is on fire. Please send help. I'm sorry. Get out and stay away. We can't get to you. Please send me help. My baby needs a breathing treatment. She is struggling and I can't help her. I am sorry. We can't get to you. We have you on the list. My sister is dead. What do I do? I can't handle seeing her. Someone please help me. I'm sorry. We cannot get to you. Cover her up and move to a different part of your house. Help me. I have run out of food. I am sorry. The roads are not passable. We cannot get to you. We have you on the list. These are just a few of the near 1,000 calls we took. People screaming, begging, pleading, crying for help. And the only thing we can say is, I'm sorry. We were serving them during this time, all while having our families on our minds, not knowing their safety, not knowing the condition of our homes, not knowing the conditions of our friends, not knowing the conditions of coworkers in the field. But we are secretaries. Could you handle the screams? Could you handle the pleading? Could you handle the begging? Could you handle the death? But we are secretaries. This is a career-ending event for some, and a near career-ending event for others. Counselors have been called in to help, but does it really? But we are secretaries. You don't stop hearing the cries. You don't stop hearing the begging. You don't stop hearing the pleading. You never forget a death. But we are secretaries. All helpless, sitting there. No communication, left in the dark, wondering, thinking the worst. Because you have heard the worst. Our secretary jobs are difficult under normal circumstances, but when a catastrophic event happens, it's magnified by 1,000. But we are secretaries. I won't go into much more detail right now because I am still processing this event. But what I do know is this. If you want to make a difference, go to your officials and tell them all about your secretaries and the things they have to deal with. We should be high risk. We should be taken seriously. I dare any one of the powers that be to sit in our chair for a day and then tell me you are just a secretary. Thank you so much for allowing me to read this and help share your story. Again, this will be put up soon. back throughout social media, as well as withinthetrenches.net. It's a story that deserves to be read, deserves to be heard. Next week, I will be in Illinois for the 2018 IPSTA conference. And I'll be there doing the podcast as well as an Imagine Listening session. So for everyone who's going to be there, please have your stories ready. You will have a chance to earn yourself an official I Am 911 Challenge coin and pin. All you have to do to earn that coin is to share an I Am 911 story, whether it be an I Am 911 form or long form. Also, this is only during the first half of the session. Now, you can share this story either out loud or you can write it down for me to read it for you. And if you do so, you will earn that one-of-a-kind official I Am 911 Challenge coin. It's not available anywhere else. It's not for sale. It's not for trade. It's available to those who share a story during those sessions. The last half of Imagine Listening will be open mic. And after we have gone through and had this emotional yet special moment, all of us together, we will then end it on a good note. Because we're going to laugh. We're going to laugh it off. And that's good medicine. All of us together telling funny 911 stories. And I cannot wait to be there with you and to experience it. Thank you, everyone, for the support, for everything that you bring into my life, in the life of my family, and just the success of this podcast and the movement and Imagine Listening. Everything that I do is all because of you, all of my listeners. I couldn't do this without you. Without all of you listening and backing what I have done and pushing the movement, it wouldn't be anything. So thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. For those listening, if you have any comments, questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email the show at wttpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. That's at 911 Podcast. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. This episode, along with all the others, as always, is supported by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. This episode, along with all the others, can be heard 24/7 on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, your favorite podcasting app, and withinthetrenches.net. Have a good one.